Welcome to Live the Fuel.
Welcome to Live
Welcome
the Fuel.
To Live the Fuel. Focusing on health, business, and lifestyle. And now your host, Scott Mulvaney.
All right, good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another Live the Fuel show. Today, I'm pretty excited to give you guys another live on-site type of podcast session. Obviously, most podcasters out there, they're doing everything over Skype. If you've been listening to this show for a little while or you're new, most of my episodes have been live. And today, we're actually in Easton, Pennsylvania, right alongside of Lafayette College. We're at the Mojo, I believe it's 516 Cafe, and never been here. And I'm actually connecting with another Mind of the Athlete psychologist. I believe it's psychiatrist or psychologist. We'll talk about more about that. Actually, we'll be good to differentiate those two things for people who are listening. So the great thing about this organization is I literally just connected with them because I met one of her coworkers at a Starbucks while I was doing another podcast. Then met them again speaking on the body image concerns of athletes at a local CrossFit gym, SYR CrossFit. Shout out to Rob. So today, our co-host is just another one of their elite staff, Julie Amato. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Thank you, Scott.
All right.
I'd be happy to tell you the difference between those two things at some point, if that seems interesting enough for your
now
podcast.
Because I'm a little rusty, so
yeah.
Let's just say that. I only minored in psychology. I have nowhere near the level of education you guys have. So
okay, so I'm a sports psychologist.
Yes.
But more broadly, I'm a clinical psychologist. So I do have a PhD in clinical psychology. So that's 4 years of grad school plus an internship year. And the difference really is that psychologists have PhDs, psychiatrists have MDs typically. So they go to medical school. So that's
okay.
The difference. They prescribe the meds and all that stuff. And psychologists are a little more focused on kind of like, what's the root of the problem? What can we talk about to kind of understand better mental health and how to help people develop strategies to get through the tough times?
So you guys sometimes get around the same level of treatment, except we're removing the drug piece of it.
That's about right.
Okay.
We're both focused on the mind.
Okay. So you guys are all helping everybody.
But they give away drugs and we don't.
I love that because I'm anti-drug. I can't stand drugs. I want to try and heal people through nutrition and health and wellness and just the drugs are a band-aid. I'm sorry. So.
No, that makes sense. I think sometimes, we've made remarkable strides in the mental health field with drugs because some people that have more serious mental illness like schizophrenia in the past would be living in a mental hospital and unable to function in the community. So those individuals, you know, the drugs are almost miracles. But I think it's way overprescribed in other kinds of populations, like dealing with depression and anxiety. I mean, that's part of life for some people and so for most people. And so
I have my own family members have actually gone through it.
Yeah.
Like, depression is really real nowadays.
Absolutely.
And I personally feel that. And I'll be perfectly transparent. A couple of years ago, I had a little bit of a lull. Mm-hmm. And some people would have called that a period of depression. It was after a relationship. I was struggling in my professional career. So I looked at it. I look back now. And this is before I went back to school and ended up studying psychology like I was talking to you before the show started. And I looked big picture thinking. So luckily, I never lost that. And was like, all right, there's something missing. There's something not firing. And what I realized after going back to school was I just wasn't developing all areas of my life. So when that one little piece had dropped out, it left a big hole. And that's why I became such a huge adrenaline junkie lifestyle guy, because I truly believe, and you can correct me on this being a sports psychologist, but people need to realize that you have to keep working on yourself and developing yourself. And you don't want to have to worry about, oh, when that one piece drops away, are you going to completely crash and burn? So keep developing yourself. Don't stop. And this is whether we're talking about an athlete, you know, in the gym or training for their profession as an athlete, or we're talking about the same college athletes because we're right by Lafayette, mm-hmm. Also trying to balance their degree at the same time. I don't know. I mean, what do you think about that?
I think you're spot on. I think that, if you have all of your eggs in one basket, so to speak, in life, so if you're deriving all of your happiness from a relationship, a romantic relationship, and you haven't developed the other areas of your life, or you've let your friendships fall away, as often happens, or your hobbies, that when you suffer that loss, if you don't diversify your interests, if you don't sort of have balance in your life, then that loss can be crushing.
It's bigger than most.
I mean, you're still going to struggle with the loss of a relationship, but to your point, if you've done well in managing your emotional health in terms of, hey, I'm into fitness, I have hobbies, I have activities, I have passions outside of my relationship or my job or whatever it might be, you know, it's exactly what you're talking about with Live the Fuel. It's like, if you have good balance in your life, then when one piece does fall away, there are other parts of your life that are fulfilling, that kind of gives you a little more sort of psychological sturdiness, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. So for the listeners, like, she and I had briefly talked about why I created the tagline for the show, Fuel Your Health, Business, and Lifestyle. And only reason why I chose those three domains, and I'm using that word domain, because that's what I learned at a local university here, DeSales University, minored in psychology while I was doing my marketing degree. And I remember one of the professors teaching about that balance of the domains of your life. And everybody's domains are a little bit different, but you have, on average, it's usually education or thought. You have religion or faith. You have business or job. You have, you know, your personal relationships, family, love, and then of your health, wellness, fitness. All these different domains we could be balancing in our life. And the lesson I learned was, you know, picture an axis, or an axis, I should say, like a parallel, a line going across in front of you. And then you have a bar graph, and you have each of those domains going vertically over top of that axis. And they say, okay, if you let too many of those domains drop below the bar, you're going to be pretty stressed out. Or there's going to be problems like depression and other things kicking in. And it's impossible. I don't know if it's even, maybe you can answer this. I don't know if it's really possible to keep all five or six domains above that axis. I think we're always going to be going high and low and fluctuating throughout life. So I don't know if it's really fair to even say, yeah, you got to keep all of them above parallel. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I don't think it's possible. I mean, you might have those moments in life where it feels like everything's going pretty well, but as you know, life unfolds and things happen. And so the work that we do with athletes is really about, you know, when life does unfold and negative things happens and adversity strikes, how do you manage it well? And so it's all about kind of getting through those rough patches. And, you know, we can teach best practices and kind of philosophically say, hey, we need to really address all these areas and keep them high, keep your emotional energy high, keep all these areas in a good place. But things happen.
Yeah.
And so
what's realistic?
So when I work with athletes in colleges, I find the most common issue that they struggle with is balance. And they talk about how, they put their life into three domains. Their domains are social, academic, and sport.
Cool.
And so what I hear from most college athletes is like, Julie, I kill it in two out of the three. Like, I find that if I kill it in two out of the three, I just can't seem to get all three. So in other words, I can do really well in school and really well in sports, but then I have no social life. Or if I really want to have a great social life, then, you know, I can do that and do my studies, but then my sport's not very good because I'm staying out late and I'm partying and I'm not doing what I need to do.
And the guilt trips start, like, their self-developed guilt trips start kicking in.
Yep.
So it sounds like you guys come across this very often.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And so it is. And today, you know, with today's sort of 18 to 22-year-olds and athletes, and not just that, I mean, extrapolate that to us and to adults, I mean, it really is hard to find balance. It really is hard to do everything well and to find the time to do everything well, you know, with a lot of competing obligations. And so, of course, my focus is with athletes and performance. And I think a lot of the competing obligations that they struggle with, you know, their emotional energy and stress getting drained, they're not getting enough sleep. Social media is crushing them. Oh, sleeping's so important, but the social media is crushing them. The grass always looks a bit greener when they look at other people's lives, or they feel like they're missing out on things. They're expected to respond to everything very quickly. Back when I competed in sports, like, if there was a weather issue and practice was canceled, there was literally a phone tree, and you had to call each person on that phone tree. None of us had cell phones. We're calling like a dorm line, or you're going to like visit the person. Now these kids are expected. The coaches can change schedule at any time.
Real quick, this dorm tree phone thingy. So, I mean, we got to dig into that. Hold on.
Okay,
all
right.
I never experienced that.
Okay.
I never went away to college.
Okay.
I worked my way through to school. I went to a Penn State local Commonwealth campus, they call them.
Yep.
Before it became Lehigh Valley, it was Penn State Allentown, a tiny little building out in, I don't know, Fogelsville or wherever that was. So
Let me teach you about this archaic way of communication.
Well,
it's back like cavemen writing on stones. But
whoever's listening in, we are the same age.
So we'll date us a little bit.
Okay.
I went to college in the late 90s, and at that time, my freshman year, email had just been developed.
Yep.
It was like the first year. It was like Eudora and AOL and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And the dial-up.
Oh, Eudora. I
remember that?
About
and
it in
so
a while.
Colleges were like the first
Penn
ones
State was
to
using
have
Eudora.
It. Yep.
Yes.
That's it. And so when nobody had a cell phone.
Yep.
None of my college teammates had
cell phone. I got my first
cell phone
in 97, 98.
Okay, so you were even ahead of the curve. Yeah, I mean, that's early.
Because of my side job.
Yeah, so I graduated college in 99, and I played basketball in college. And so if there was a cancellation for practice, I mean, the practice schedule was literally on a piece of paper. I'm not talking about a Google Doc or any of this stuff.
They print it out and hand it to you.
Yeah, they print it out and hand it to you. And if there was a change, like, oh, it snowed in Rhode Island, so we have to change it. It was like, okay, you're calling so-and-so, and then I'm going to call Scott.
So you were a traveling athlete.
Yeah, okay. But we had to call each other if there was a practice change, like literally to our landline dorm phone, and if we weren't there, we had to walk and like find the person. So the kids these days, they don't appreciate that.
They just text,
but that makes life easier and harder for them. And so it's easier for situations like that, but it's harder because people can change the schedule at any time, and they're expected to respond to everything very quickly.
And that goes in the business world too. Like I think the college kids today are going to be set up more for success because they have learned the technology and they can stay on top of that. The side effect of this for the millennial generation coming out, or the next Z gen after that, or whatever we're calling them, is that now you're expected to be on top of that.
You are
not allowed. Some people feel guilty because they have a personal life. And I teach people this. I'm like, listen, guys, I teach social media marketing. I teach people how to build their brand online personally and professionally. And it is okay to unplug. I'm guilty of it. My own girlfriend calls me out, and she's like, could you put the phone down? So even our generation, X-Gen, Gen X, is still struggling with it too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something important because you obviously are trying to consult and teach from the psychology mindset. I'm just teaching from the like general life balance. Like, it's okay. Like, dude, say no, or just get back to when you get back to them. I don't know.
Yep. No, it's a struggle. And even... You know, I think the BlackBerry and the iPhone have
I
given
used to call them the CrackBerry.
Yeah, the CrackBerry has has kind of opened up the world for people who worked in corporate America, where you're having a sleepover in the office to get deals done and out the door. And now
I was crushing CrackBerries for 10 years. When the iPhone came out, was my departure from the CrackBerry.
The CrackBerry let people go home from the office and not have to sleep over. But the problem then is you're bringing your work home, and so it really is that double-edged sword, and balancing it becomes
really hard. Had that. You know where that started.
Where did that
start?
Was
the pagers.
Oh my gosh.
We were 90s, right? The only people still using pagers this day usually are doctors.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a technology they need to depend on because you don't have to worry about cell phone towers. They're pretty confident on that.
Mm-hmm.
But the side effect of that was I started realizing, I'm like, the work gave me a pager. And then I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe I should have a personal pager for my personal life. I want to keep my personal business. And then next thing you know, I look like a geek because I got like two pagers clipped on my belt.
Look like a drug dealer.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Everybody thought that was a big joke. Be like, oh, what are you, a drug dealer now? And I'm like, no, dude. I was working in the IT world, and they need to be able to text me if something went down or crashed. So, and then next thing you know, we're doing that with cell phones, and I've got a business cell phone and a personal cell phone. I'm like, it was ridiculous. So I think it's been a spiraling effect for a while. So.
Absolutely. And, you know, when I speak with a group of college students and ask them who sleeps with their phone like an arm's length away, it's every single one. You know, it's like you're supposed to be sleeping, but there it is. It's
so
right there.
It's funny. Have you ever heard of the term biohacking?
No.
Okay. So you ever heard of the bulletproof exec from the West Coast, Dave Asprey?
No.
So he's a...
Teach me something.
So biohacking is like basically people who choose to hack their own body, figure out how to find peak sleep, peak performance, peak health.
And Fitbits.
Beyond that. Like Dave Asprey like takes it to a whole different level. He won't even touch a Fitbit. His stuff is beyond that.
Really?
But he's the one who created the bulletproof coffee. Bulletproof coffee is you put healthy fats into your coffee instead of sugar and crap that's just slowly killing you. So like his like little perfect coffee recipes, obviously he has his own coffee now, because he suffered from mold exposure, and there's a whole thing that does to your body. Anyway, so that's why he became so obsessed with this. And he was one of those like tech world, like Silicon Valley guys who just became health nut guy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he's like, all right, you know, you use MCT oil, aka coconut oil. You put that in your coffee. You're fueling your brain with a healthier source of fats. It's going to peak your performance levels, you know, from the beginning of the day.
Sounds delicious too.
Oh, it is. It's awesome. I love it. So that coffee sitting right next to you is bulletproofed. So So, and if you don't have MCT oil,
might be taking a swig of that.
Find another source of healthy fat. Like, you could even go to if you're okay with dairy, you can go with like a heavy whipping cream or basically they teach you like just find healthy fat sources. Even as crazy as it sounds, grass-fed butter.
What is it?
Grass-fed butter.
Grass-fed butter.
In your coffee.
Okay.
As weird, I tell people that all the time. First of all, people think I'm weird when I do shots of olive oil. Now they're like, they're hearing that I'm doing. The whole point here
that
is...
That sounds good to me, actually. Like I love 80, olive oil.
80% of your brain tissue is fat cells. So so you want good fat up there. So it's like, well, think about it. How are we fueling the fat cells? Are we putting good stuff into them or bad stuff into them? So it's he's a whole hacker guy.
Wow.
So anyway, the whole point here is that he talks heavily about sleep. And what you're talking about is the whole... Do you have your technology with arm's reach? Are you unplugging when you're sleeping? And literally, they've actually studied it to the point where if your phone is next to your bed and there's flashing lights happening, you're not, you're actually, whether you know your eyes are closed, you need to have like a dungeon of a bedroom. Like you're supposed to shut out, you know, you've probably seen blackout drapes and all this stuff. So he's one of those guys who also pushes the heavy focus on sleep because especially as an athlete, you need maximum recovery. Mentally and physically. And it sounds like you guys are talking about that. So
we talk about it a lot. And I always say to the teams that I work with, like if you were a professional team or an Olympic level team, like the first thing I'd be teaching you about is the importance of sleep and as it relates to performance, because stage 3 and 4 sleep is critical for like muscle repair or growth recovery. Athletes don't always know about that.
Your biggest recovery times are happening when you're sleeping.
Absolutely. That's when memory consolidation occurs. So exams are around the corner, and too often these athletes are staying up really late trying to cram and study, but they're only sleeping then 4 hours.
Because they don't know any better.
They don't know any better, so they're missing
it. We didn't understand.
We didn't understand. We didn't understand.
You got to have a cram session.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No.
The cram session holds no value if you're not sleeping and consolidating what you just read.
Yeah.
And the consolidation occurs, you know, 6 to 8 to 9 hours into your sleep.
Yeah.
And so they're wasting their time, and then they feel like crap the next day on top of it.
Well, in that 6 to 9 hour window, I believe that is your REM cycle, right? You have to be asleep for a period of time to really go deep into that REM sleep cycle. And if you're not relaxed, if you hopefully stop drinking stimulants like coffee after I think 2 to 3 p.m. is really the cutoff for the average person who's going to sleep between 10 and 12. But again, college students are staying up until 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
Oh, I'm gonna drink some coffee to keep up late, or an energy drink.
Yep.
I'm like, dude, you're going to try and now go to sleep with only 4 hours of sleep. You got stimulants in your body. You are not going to have a good recovery. So.
No. And it's crazy because, you know, on top of that, of course, they care about their performance academically and athletically. But just for you and I, there's more research evidence coming out now that sleep deprivation is leading to these different kinds of substances being left in the brain. So basically, it's like toxicity that at night, it's almost like picture like the brain gets wiped away and cleaned up, and it gets rid of toxins when
you
sleep.
It's like the custodians are coming in and cleaning up the classroom and the kids
Exactly. Yeah. So that when you don't get enough sleep and those neurotoxins stay in your brain, there's now some evidence kind of linking that with the development of like dementia, Alzheimer's type stuff. So it's like, okay, what kind of long-term damage are you doing to yourself by not getting that sleep? And just, you know, bigger picture comes back to what you're saying. It's like, how do you get balance? And if you're tired and you're fatigued, then you sometimes don't even really know it.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do other things well.
Especially if you've now, because everybody's like, oh, it's okay, I've trained myself, right? I've been doing this for a couple of months now. So it's just like the reps in the gym. I've now trained my body to do this. And I'm like, that's not the training you want to teach your body or your brain to do. Like, you have just built accumulated exhaustion, or what you're talking about is accumulated neurotoxicity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be even harder to purge that from the system if that's been happening now repetitively, is what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because you've ever heard the book, PhD researcher from the West Coast, The Grain Brain by Dr. Perlmutter?
No.
Tied directly into what you just said.
Really?
He's a researcher that studies brain health. He works with dementia, Alzheimer's, depression, all of that.
I love this.
And we just talked about healthy fats. He's a huge cut all grain from your diet.
Oh, wow.
He's a New York Times best-selling book author. Like, dude, I mean, he's been on that. I don't really follow Dr. Oz. I think he's kind of a spaz. But if he's somewhat helping people, great. The point is, his book, phenomenal. I have it physically, and I have it on Audible because I love crushing digital books when I'm in the car. Highly recommend it because he talks about all the research he does. He talks about the importance of sleep, and he talks about he has to strip all excess sugar consumption and grain consumption from someone's diet, recycles in hardcore vegetable intake and healthy fat sources because that's what the brain needs. It's starving for it. So all these people who have been following like low fat diets, most of the time you strip the healthy fats out, the companies have to do something to make them taste better. They're pumping you know, sugars and crap into it. So now you're starving your brain from what it needs. So he's, I highly recommend that book. If you're a book person, like, check that out, because if you understand it from the neurological psychology piece of it, he's talking about it strictly from the brain health and all of that.
That is awesome.
So that is totally tied together. So.
Yeah, that's amazing, because I think a lot of the research I look at, there's a Dr. Ma, M-A-H, out of Stanford that's done some really awesome research that now professional sports teams are using about...
Is Ma a biochemist, or is he... I've heard of him. I've heard about Ma, but I mean, are they... Is it on the biochemist side or on the psychology side?
No, they're on the psychology side. Yeah, okay. And they're really just sleep experts. And they've been brought in, like, with the Golden State Warriors, San Jose Sharks. They're really, their primary presence is kind of West Coast with Stanford and some of those groups and Berkeley. And so they just talk a lot about the value of sleep and just reaction time and mood and just overall performance. Like, lots of research out there about, like, actually, like, basketball players shooting free throws 10% better if they just sleep for 10 hours a night for 5 straight weeks. It's crazy.
On that neuro component, I forget who spoke about this or one of the books. I geek out on this stuff if you can't figure that out.
No, it's great.
They talk about not just what you've been talking about, but also now, man, who did it? They talk about imagining yourself completing the free throw.
Absolutely.
And they've actually tested people physically just practicing the free throws.
Yes.
And then taking other athletes and just training them mentally, develop it.
Yep.
And then they both take them out there and have them compete. And the guy or girl who did it mentally is outperforming.
Yep.
Because they've trained their brain to just know that they're always going to make the shot. It's crazy, the power of the mind.
It's unbelievable. And that's one of the coolest studies out there. And there's a bunch like it where you basically, the mind isn't that great. It's kind of like almost like a glitch in the system of the brain where we don't do well distinguishing between like reality and not real.
Okay.
so when you have a dream and you wake up and you think it just happened, it's kind of an example of that where you might have a nightmare and like, oh my God, did that just happen? And you can't distinguish between reality and what's imagined. And so if you can take some time and relax and get your brain in that relaxed state and kind of visualize or imagine the things you want to do as far as performance goes, it's almost like you're creating a template in your brain to then have that performance. So we train athletes to do that all the time.
And I love the word template. That's really a great use, because like people can imagine that. Like we develop templates all the time, our study habit templates, our workouts, our note sheets, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like that's all we're doing here. You just, I believe the modern term now is actually called mind mapping. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah. So it's, you know, sometimes people say mental imagery because it's not just seeing it in your mind's eye. To the extent you can incorporate all your senses into an experience, what does the crowd sound like? You know, what does it feel like to touch that ball? Like, what does the Gatorade taste like? You know, all of it, just getting really sensory and really real.
Right.
If you can do a little bit of that before performing in any aspect of life, you know, there's just a ton of good research evidence that you will be more likely to have that performance that you imagine in your brain. And it does have to do with kind of brain plasticity and suggestibility of the mind when you're relaxed, creating this template of like what you want to do. And it just gives you more confidence too. So if you're preparing for a big game, one where you might be stressed out, it's like, ah, like if I imagine myself doing it, then when I get out there and the moment of truth comes, I don't feel as nervous. Right. So that's
you're basically giving your mind the reps necessary
exactly
to build the programming, the mind mapping, whatever we're talking about. So when you physically have to go do that, because people keep forgetting this, like the whole reason why you go to practice and you physically practice is because you're physically tying that back to your brain to train the brain to remember how to do the movement.
Mm-hmm.
So like to your point, again, why not throw a little extra training in and do the mental development when you're not on the court or whatever sport you're doing? I mean, we talk about this with our ski athletes. I'm like, guys, like close your eyes. Like imagine yourself making the turns through a slalom course, or if you're on the GS course and you're hauling ass, like just like, yeah, man, like just ripping the turns and like imagine yourself up on your ski edges and you're actually impacting the gate and you're just ripping through that turn. Like the mental connection is powerful. So
yeah, it's amazing. I mean, almost every Olympic athlete uses that. The skiers are one great example, especially if you've had some trauma. That's another way to use this, because some skiers, there was a great article actually in the New York Times about this, how a skier had broken her leg and had gotten seriously injured. And so she just spent a lot of times doing what we would call mental reps. So imagining herself taking that turn over and over again successfully so that the next time she would A, feel less nervous, and B, be more likely to actually perform it successfully. So it's really cool.
And I think that's important, especially when you come back from things like concussions and things of that nature, because I know no matter what sport it is, concussions are legit. I mean, just to maintain a USSA ski race coach cert that I have, like every single year, if I want to go work with a team, I have to retake the same. They haven't changed the test, but I have to go back onto the website, redo the concussion testing, like, right. Because it is important, especially mm-hmm. at the youth and the developmental age. Like, you get one trauma that's a concussion level trauma, and it goes unrecognized. It could trigger a lot of severe issues that could maybe not do anything now, but then redevelop or resurface in college. And next thing you know, you're out. Like, your college career is done
yep.
because of something that happened years ago that somebody didn't see or notice, because that trauma is still there.
Yeah.
But making the comeback from a concussion, like, we might make a kid take a week off. Until your doctor clears you, you can't come back on course. You know, you have to take it easy. They get all frustrated. But then I say, listen, in the meantime, work on those mental reps. Mm-hmm. Imagine yourself mm-hmm. on course until we could physically get you out there. And I don't know if that's some stuff you guys get involved with when you do your consulting with teams at the college level or not. So
absolutely. I mean, obviously, concussion is a hot button issue right now in sports, yeah. as is mental health. But yeah, the injured athlete taking mental reps is huge. I mean, this was kind of made a little more into the sort of national news with Robert Griffin III, who's been frequently injured, NFL quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, formerly with the Redskins, now with the Browns. But he talked about leading the NFL in mental reps when he tore his ACL, that, you know, he was going to miss the year physically, but he wasn't going to miss it mentally. And he was going to imagine himself out there. He's taking every single physical rep so that he didn't fall behind. And so it's great advice for an athlete, even someone who's out for a week, to continue to prepare mentally so that it just makes their return that much, the transition to return that much smoother.
Sounds like they should do a case study on that guy. I mean,
RG3.
I don't know. I mean, that's a pretty cool story. I didn't realize it was the whole season that he was out. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. and obviously the proof is in the pudding, so to speak, when you make mm-hmm. your comeback.
Yeah.
If you come back strong, something must have worked.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. And I think a lot of athletes do that. And coaches are always wondering or asking me about, like, what do we do with the injured athletes, you know, concussion
you
or otherwise?
Active. Yeah.
Yeah. And so some people are mistakenly are kind of putting them out to do the bike or do something kind of separate from the team.
Yeah.
But you really do want them to kind of utilize the visualization, the mental reps.
Well, so if there was like a coach or even just a parent hearing this and they're mm-hmm. a parent of an athlete or a coach of an athlete or just people who know somebody mm-hmm. who's young or old that has suffered from a concussion, for example, is there any kind of like immediate tips that just or general tips you think that anybody should know that's like, yeah, please do this. I mean, don't forget about their mental development. I don't know. Is there stuff that you always like teach or throw out there?
Yeah, with concussion or any injury, I mean, I think what happens oftentimes is people underestimate the emotional impact of injury. So.
Okay.
You and I are adrenaline junkies with respect to physical activity.
Oh,
so
yeah.
if that's taken away from you as a high-performing athlete, you're going to suffer from some depression.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be in the dumps. And part of that is because exercise kicks off all those great drugs in your brain. You
yep.
know, it kicks off
the
all the drugs.
Endorphin rush.
Yeah, the endorphins. That's the body's natural painkillers.
Serotonin production.
Absolutely. Yeah. Serotonin responsible for mood. So, you know, if you're concussed, you're not allowed really to do much. But if you can get a sweat somehow, maybe it's sitting in a sauna. Like, that would help you a little bit. But, you know, just trying to understand that, like, athletes who are injured, best practices, like, that's when sleep becomes even more important because of the muscle repair, regrowth, recovery, and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But the return from concussion is so tricky. I mean, it can be a week, it could be a month, and it's all based on self-report.
Right.
And sometimes athletes struggle with that because they're like, well, I have a headache. Is that because I'm stressed out or is that because of my concussion? And like, I really don't know how to differentiate between concussion symptoms and anxiety. And so, you know, some of it is just look like expect when you're injured, you're going to deal with some mood swings. But kind of like what you described with your depression, it's like, can you channel that injury into something productive?
Right.
So for you, that was a wake up call to say, hey, like, all right, so I lost this piece of my life. Now I'm going to develop some others. Just like when you're an injured athlete, if you tore your, you know, left ACL or you broke your right arm, well, all right, and you're a basketball player, get better with your left arm. I mean, you've got to try. Bad things are going to happen.
Yeah.
So you've got to try to find ways to channel that into something productive. Maybe that's you rehabbing better than anybody's ever rehabbed before or getting other parts of your body or mind ready. So.
Well, it's funny because I learned that from a great mentor in my earlier corporate, you know, days as I was growing up through the business world ranks. And it's like the most successful people out there, whether we're talking about business, relationships, or just sports, fitness, doesn't matter. It's like the ones who choose to embrace change are the ones who will succeed. Are you going to choose to embrace it first? That's part of that mental flip, you know, flipping the switch. But then also, how are you going to adapt? It's like, okay, I might have, like, I've had my shoulder rebuilt twice.
Wow.
Lots of stupid things. So rooting from originally a ski accident. And that's always kind of held me back, so to speak. But also, and I think I talked about this when I had Megan on or on her episode, on episode 21 from Mind of the Athlete. As a reminder, listeners, find out more about them at mindoftheathlete.com. But the point here is that if I allow my mindset to constantly present weakness, if I always see my right shoulder as the weaker shoulder, and this is the reps that I'm putting in right now, even at 39 years of age, I have to constantly remind myself, like, Scott, your shoulder is stronger than it's ever been. After that last surgery in 2007, like, I've had years to redevelop it. So stop using it as a crutch. You know, get that mindset beyond that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's actually stronger than it used to be, so own it. And don't use that as a crutch anymore. So I think some of us also get stuck into that little, I don't know, that lower wavelength or something to speak, where it's like, oh my God, I've always, this injury will hold me back the rest of my life. I don't know. You probably deal with that with some of your athletes.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're right. Stuff happens. So it becomes about how good are you at focusing on what you do have, not what you don't, you know? And sometimes we call that attitude of gratitude. It's like, what can you be grateful for? What can you focus on that's good and positive? Because there are going to be negatives, but we can't amplify our focus on those. We can't live there.
You know,
there's going to be things that go wrong, but we can't live there. And I see this with athletes all the time, very perfectionistic, many of them, particularly college female athletes. This need to be perfect is really something else. And it's
well,
like,
you ladies are accomplishing a lot, and you're also changing the old school status quo, right? Like, there is so much more available to women nowadays than it used to be, but there's still a long path to go, right? Free quality and all of that. And
oh,
so
absolutely.
I see that a lot. I used to work, I will admit, when I worked for T-Mobile, I worked for more women there than I'd ever done in my life in any other business. So I think that company did a great job really pushing the envelope and changing what I saw as the business world. That there was more female executives in that company than I was used to seeing. It was really cool.
That's awesome.
What I noticed was, to your point, there was a lot of perfectionism going on. They drove themselves hard, and I could see over the years, like, impacts in their personal life, or some of them, this led to divorce and everything else. It's just my observations. And I'm like, I wonder if that was their perfectionism going on. I don't know.
Well, it's crazy. It's crazy. I work with a lot of Ivy League athletes, and that's kind of, if you're going to really take the upper echelon academically and athletically, that's what you're looking at. And so their greatest strengths, their greatest weakness, like, hey, we're perfectionistic. That's what got us where we are. That's why we succeed, because we pay attention to detail and we're high achievers.
And you keep driving.
You keep driving. You keep pushing. You're not going to be satisfied with the status quo. But at the same time, it's like, well, when have you made it? When can you actually stop and say, like, wow, like, I'm actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Are we
relishing in those little wins along the way, or are we pushing right over them?
Not enough. You know? And so what I see oftentimes is like, okay, I got a 98 on that exam. And you obsess over the one question you got wrong instead of like, look, you did 98% of this right. And you see it in sports. It's like, oh, like, I missed that one free throw. It's like, you scored 30 points and you got 15 rebounds. You're going to obsess over one free throw? Like, what the heck? But again, that's what drives people to be elite. But it also, you know, can lead to some depression, because, like, when do you celebrate, like, a victory? What is even a victory? It's like, nothing's good enough.
Well, I mean, we also look at other, you know, obviously elite athletes, like people like Michael Jordan and everybody else over the years. And it's like, I think when you reach that elite status, it's not just putting in the reps to, you know, succeed and get that 98% or higher, so to speak, but it's also like, when you do have that 1% failure or 2% failure, are you using the word failure or are you using it as, this is just an opportunity to improve and this is going to be something to work on later. I don't need to destroy myself or tear myself down. But it's like, okay, cool. I made a mistake. I'm human. What can I do? First of all, awesome. Did all, like you just said, I rocked it with all this other stuff. Let's celebrate that first.
Mm-hmm.
Take that positive energy off of that. And then how am I going to channel that positive energy forward to develop that 1 or 2% mistake? Like, don't dwell on that 1 or 2% mistake, so it brings down all that positive mindset energy. It's like, you're destroying yourself before you can even win, I guess, so to speak. I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, you're totally right. I see that too often in sports, and the crazy part is that thing you're striving for, let's say it's a Super Bowl. Okay, let's say that's like the epitome. You think that's going to bring you everything.
Yep,
I'm going to get the MVP of the Super Bowl, or I'm going to win the Super Bowl. I'll tell you what, one of the saddest days is the day after that, because you think you've achieved it all in life, and it's like, ugh, like, you start feeling a little bit empty. And it goes back, we're coming full circle to what you talked about with your breakup.
Bouncing
it's
the
like,
domains.
If you don't have something bigger, if you don't have something bigger in life, or kind of more diversity in life that you care about, then, you know, it can't be all about that. And that's not going to bring you the ultimate.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's why the balance in life is so important. That's why I really like what you're doing. And I think it's valuable to talk about this stuff.
I think it's powerful because it doesn't. And that's why I'm excited. I stumbled across you guys because you guys are right in Bethlehem. And I lived in Bethlehem all these years. And I live in Allentown now. And I've lived out west. And I moved back. And I'm like, how did I not know about Mind of the Athlete? I mean, just listening to Megan and Aaron on their presentations and now learning about you, and I still got to meet the rest of your team yet. So for our listeners, there's going to be more of this coming on, but it's like, wow, man, like there's so much that people have to learn.
Yeah.
And if we can just impact, hell, just one person from this episode in a positive way that they take this and they use this to channel into their next win, their next success, or maybe this helps them finally overcome maybe a little rift that they've been stuck in for a while and they're stuck in a rut. I mean, this is huge. Like, that's the power of stuff like this, is that you're putting all the knowledge out there. And obviously, if they need a little bit more, they can just contact you guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because you guys do stuff not just locally. I mean, you guys are doing, I believe you guys work with webinars and you guys have a YouTube channel. You have a big YouTube channel, actually. There's a lot of content on there.
Yes, we do. We have a huge YouTube channel. I think there's something like 400 plus videos on there.
And yeah, you're crushing video content.
All over social media. But yeah, we travel all over the place. I was just in California last week, which is awesome. And tomorrow I'll be at Princeton.
We're in California.
I was at Cal Berkeley with their basketball team, which was great.
I was down in San Diego last month.
Oh, so you were awesome.
Yeah. Well, I was there for a conference, but it was around a lot of mindset stuff. But it was actually called Thrive, Make Money Matter. And like famous people like Jack Canfield, author of Chicken Soup for the Soul, was one of the keynote speakers there.
Oh, that's so cool.
26 speakers that were all anywhere from 6 to 9-figure income earners.
Wow.
And the point of it was not so much about the business point of it, but it was about people developing the mindset to embrace their income and embrace their success and develop the mental reps to build the success they've always wanted. But while doing that, pairing it with a purpose. So the whole making money matter thing there, hey, are you, if you want to succeed, there should be a purpose. Why? Because it builds a better mental acceptance to what you're doing. You're not just making money to be some rich jackass. You're doing it because you want to, you want to impact lives. You want to do something more. It's just cool from that. So it's just funny how like we have a choice to go to different kinds of events, go to different schools. You guys are traveling around hitting Berkeley. Berkeley's a legit school. So, I mean, how long you guys been supporting them?
Oh, a college friend of mine coaches there, so I've been supporting them for a long time. Okay. But we're traveling all around. It's fun. I mean, I think when you combine passion and purpose, you're going to get some good things.
Yeah.
It's not going to feel like a job. It's going to feel like something you want to do.
Well, I love the fact you're supporting a local school like Lafayette College here, too.
Yeah.
Like, that's in your own backyard. So
absolutely.
The fact that you guys can impact local, because we have a lot of colleges around here. Do you work with all of them? Do you know? Or
most of them. We've got a relationship with most of them.
Because you got Lehigh,
Lafayette.
You got Muhlenberg?
Muhlenberg, Moravian, DeSales. Yep.
Okay.
We work with a lot of the sports teams at all of those schools. So it's great. It's great to have an impact. And as you said, that feels good. You feel like the work you're doing matters. And, there's something to that.
That's awesome. So I know you've got another interview coming up. Well, not really interview, but a coaching session or whatever you do with the coach of their women's volleyball team here at Lafayette, right?
That's right.
So let's bring this to a close because you guys will all be coming back on. I love where this is going. Mind of the Athlete is awesome, guys. So I mentioned you earlier, we'd love to have a final word. What would you like to be your final message to our listening audience? Like, what is a big picture concept that is just a message you want to put out there? It's like, hey, guys, if you think of Dr. Julie Amato, like, what's a message you want to leave them?
Well, I really like the thing that you just said about living with passion and purpose. And so, part of that comes into my field is like, take care of your emotional health, like be around people who fill you up, stay away from the drama and the people who bring you down. And if, life throws something at you that you really feel like you can't handle or you're not handling well, get some help. We all need to do that from time to time. And we're here to be a part of that. There's, I'm sure, people in your community that want to help you, friends, family, professionals. So, live life to the fullest, keep that balance. But if it gets overwhelming, there's no shame in getting help. That's kind of the message we really try to talk about. Like, it's all about taking care of your emotional health.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, there you guys go. So again, this is just another awesome, awesome Live the Fuel episode, guys. MindOfTheAthlete.com. Check them out. Dr. Julie Amato, you are on Twitter and everything else. So the cool thing is, guys, as always, we have killer show notes. So if you didn't write everything down today, that's all right. Go to the website. Go to Julie's episode. You'll have all the links we talked about, their websites, her social media profiles, etc. We had a blast here in this cool little coffee cafe with they make smoothies and everything else here today. So she had the final word. Again, guys, we're here to fuel your health, your business, your lifestyle. Thanks for listening in. And remember, keep living the fired up epic life. I'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thank you for listening to Live the Fuel. Visit us at livethefuel.com. Stay connected on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more at Live the Fuel. Live the fired up epic life. Hashtag Live the Fuel.